And the Kairas, they were fantastic. Then 2 days later, the prisoner of war camp, American officer said, "Now, if we don't need this, we have plenty. Or if you know where there is tents, cooking utensils and so on and breast, we take you there. You can fetch us," which we did do. And we built a camp. We were only 500 paratroopers there in that Llandudno camp. And end of October, we were moved up to Cherbourg. And then I think on the 1st of November, we were in one of those landing ships where they also had railway lines in. We were taken aboard and then taken over, and we landed in Cherbourg. We landed in Southampton from Cherbourg.
How were you received in Britain?
Very, very quiet. British people might have given the V salute or otherwise. Very, very quiet, very, very nice. We came then from there, from Southampton to Kempton Park. Now, unfortunately, we couldn't place any bets, there weren't any horse racing. And I don't know, because I got a PP on my ticket. You got a ticket around your neck. Then you were showered and deloused and so on. Even if you haven't had any lice, you still went through this particular thing, you see.
What did the PP mean?
A protected personnel. That is what it meant, PP. And from then I got, we got interviewed quite often. And this colonel, he says, he was a Norwegian, spoke perfect German. He says, "Well, why don't you go on the wireless and speak to the German troops?" And I said, "Sir, when Hitler is dead, yes. So long he is alive, no." Now you will say, why? Because if you have sworn your allegiance, you should keep it. And you then released from the allegiance when the man you have sworn to is dead. That is my opinion.
So you sworn allegiance to him personally?
Well, we all had. We all had to swear, you know, to Adolf Hitler. There were four. They would put their fingers on the sword, and you put your hands up, you see. And then the officer here, they told that sword, and that is where you did swear to the allegiance at that particular time. You couldn't do any other. And if you have sworn, and it says in Germany, "Wer auf die deutsche Fahne schwört, hat nichts mehr, was ihm selber gehört." We're swearing on a flag of Germany can say nothing is its own no more. How's that?
Did they, when you were POW in Britain, did the British authorities in charge of you try to change your opinions in any way?
No, they did not. When the war was over, yes, then we did see, which we didn't believe at the beginning, impossible, those atrocities which have happened in concentration camps. People even today say, "Oh, we did know." We did not. I remember from home, there were three chappies that went into, I don't know what they had done. I couldn't even tell you. One was a tailor in any case, and that is why he went into a concentration camp. And I believe he was in Oranienburg, which is just outside Berlin. And when he came back, I said, "Well, what was it now? All right." I said, "Well, what did you do?" "Oh, we went up in the morning, we had morning sport, then we had our breakfast, and we had schooling, you know, this, that, and the other, and then we worked, and then we came back, and we had our lunch, and then we had a rest, and then we..." You see, he was afraid to say, if he would have said something what was true, he would have been back in again, never come out. And you see, this is what I want to say, that is the preservation of life. That is why people did not speak. It's diabolical, and that is how it is. Everyone is afraid of his own life.
So you knew about the existence of concentration camps?
Yes, I only did know of Oranienburg, of Dachau, and of Bergen-Belsen. You see, I even was in a place in Bergen, 41, 42, we trained there, and I didn't see any camp. I didn't. And when the war was over and we did see the map of Germany, where they all were, believe you me, we were all flabbergasted. We thought that is an impossibility. And it was true.
Where were you at Bergen-Belsen exactly?
It was an army camp. Had a fantastic barracks there and also cinema, and we were training every day, and then at night, you know, you went to the cinema. Well, it was free in any case, you didn't have to pay. So I think it's like the British troops did exactly the same. It's more or less to keep you happy.
But were there any rumours going on about what was happening?
No, none.
How did the British authorities bring the attention of the POWs to the camps?
Well, we were up in
photographs or something?
Yes, we were up in Camp 22, and it was then in films. And we were forced to see that in any case. It made many, many poorly. You know, they vomited. They said that is an impossibility. Well, it is true. I will show you a picture of my mother. She wasn't in a concentration camp. And, you know, the other day there was the film on Battle of the Bulge, you know, the last thing, you know. Now, first of all, that particular general that what was being in charge there, he wasn't that thick. He was very, very thin. Or he brought him in, you know, being well fed and so on. It's all nonsense. And people in Germany were quite well fed in villages. It's the old story, you see, because they could have plenty of way and so on, which you couldn't do in town. And and my mother, also from a village, then marching, you're being thrown out by the Poles and so on, which stands to reason. I mean, let's be honest about it. The Poles have been kicked from pillar to post for the last 1,000 years. If it wasn't by the Germans, it was by the Austrians. If it wasn't by the Austrians, by the Russians. If it wasn't by them, by the Swedes. And so it went everlasting. And then they were divided between Austria, Russia and Germany, and then a little bit of Sweden got a little bit, and then all of a sudden then they were again divided and so on.
But you're going to tell me something about your mother in relation to...
Yes, and if you see a picture of my mother, what she looked like, there is no much difference between a concentration camp victim.
Because of lack of food?
Yes. Because 42, or even 43, yeah, 42, we were there in that particular regrouping. And if you got, three potatoes, jacket potatoes. Now, if you found one good one, you were lucky. Mostly they were bad. You couldn't eat them. And there was a huge prisoner of war camp of Russian soldiers there. And believe you me, I felt bitter. And I pride myself sharing my Russian with them, not throwing it in, what some of them have done. You know, they did throw it in. No, I cut it up and gave, so far as it went, each a little bit. Because I felt sorry for them, believe you me, they were treated diabolical.
Where was this POW camp in Britain that you were taken to? Was that at Kempton Park?
No, we came from Kempton Park up here to Crewe Hall. No, Crewe Hall. It's Crewe Hall is 3 miles outside of Crewe, here, Liverpool. And from there we came, and then after Christmas we went up to Camp 183A. That was a bad camp.
Where was that?
On the border between England and Scotland and Scotland. That was a bad camp because the British officer, he was no soldier, and the German Lager, Sheik, he was a nasty man. So we revolted, and so straight off we were taken up to Camp 22, which was a so-called Nazi camp in New Cumnock.
How did you revolt?
Well, I don't. You revolt, you either sit and don't do nothing. It's very simple, you know.
Passive resistance.
Yes, passive, yes.
What specifically were your grievances at that camp?
Well, apparently it was about the heating. And if we had one room heated, that was enough. And apparently in Germany, they had found out British prisoners of war didn't get any heating during the day. Now, you see, they were all working outside. So therefore, why heat something if there's nobody in? And so that got adopted here, and actually, we stand to reason, you stayed for that, isn't it? And in any case, we would end up in Scotland. And
what number was that camp where you had the passive resistance?
183A.
183A?
Yeah.
Where was it? In Northumberland?
On the border between between England and Scotland, just on the border there somewhere. I couldn't tell you because, I mean, it's a long time ago.
On the English side or the Scottish side?
It could be on the English side. And then we were sent up to New Cumnock, Camp 22.
Was that better?
That was excellent.
You say it was supposed to be a Nazi camp?
Yes, because there were paratroopers, U-boat men, SS, and then the flying personnel, you know, pilots, and so on. We were there 3,000. And the commandant, colonel, his wife, born German, which she married in Germany in the 20s. And we had a fantastic choir, and there was every Wednesday where the officers mess for, they were singing the German, you know, German songs, German Lieder. Lieder am Abend. Marvelous day. In beginning of August, we then were made ready, and our camp speaker, he says, you know, when the war was over, let's say it like this, the war was over, and our camp speaker, he didn't take us in a big heap, you know, 3,000 men. He went from hut to hut, and he says, now the war is over. Now, Germany is definitely completely decimated. And apparently there isn't one stone left on another, which is true on certain cities. I mean, they were completely flat. If you go today, you wouldn't believe it was like that, would you?
No.
It's impossible. Yeah, that is my way of saying, because people say, well, Liverpool isn't even, it's still warband. I said, well, that is just my, well, how come in Germany? I said, well, that just shows you the British Air Force made a better job than the Luftwaffe. That's true, isn't it? Now, coming back now, see, we up there then in New Cumnock, and this, he went then from hood to hood and telling us what to do and so on. And he says, well, we put a letter into the war office to allow us to work, and he worded it. And apparently this camp speaker, he also again spoke perfect English, and he never used it. And I says to him, I said, well, if you speak perfect English, why don't you converse with a colonel like that? No, he says, no, I can't. I said, why? Well, he says, if I converse with him, I haven't got the time to think about a good answer. Now, if he speaks to me, when he translates to me, I know already what I can say. There's some truth in that, isn't there?
Yes.
That is why most politicians do exactly the same. Correct?
That's right. But you say the camp speaker in Camp 183A was not good.
No.
He was
a Wachmeister. Now, a Wachmeister is like a Feldwebel, a sergeant. He wasn't a Feldwebel, a sergeant. He was a Wachmeister. He was from the police. from the police force. Nothing to do with the military. He got captured somewhere and then brought here, and then naturally Wachmeister. Everybody thought he was, army Feldwebel, which he wasn't.
And so he didn't represent you properly?
No. Well, he was actually a nasty man. You see, there was a big hut, and we could have a fire in there, and so we could be there, because, and he wouldn't have us in there. We had to be out, and I said, and we just march up to him, because we would have, I said, most likely we hung you up, Kumpel. That was it, you see, so he had to go.
What happened to you after Camp 22, then?
Camp 22, that was then on the 11th of August, we were put then on a train and brought down here to Market Raisin.
August 19...
45. And we came down here to Market Raisin, marched out 3 miles past the race course. On the left-hand side was Willingham House. It isn't there no more. And there we had a camp. Now,
what number did that have?
A German prisoner of war working camp 256. And we had to put all our belongings, what we had, on a blanket. Now, knowing what the Germans do, what is underneath gets confiscated, what is on top, they look, that's what the British do, you see. So I put everything what I had on top, because I made at that time cigarette holders, with a bone and then with timber and so on, it looked smart. And the interpreter what we had there was Leo Zitronenbaum. His sister was she did live in London, and he came from Frankfurt, and he lost his parents, his grandparents, in concentration camp. He lost everybody, that man. And he was a fantastic chap, Leo Zitronenbaum. And he says, what is that for a soul? So, all right. And you see, there were 4 soldiers, they lifted the blanket up, what was underneath, confiscated. What was on top? No. Yeah, what was on top, that you kept. And the first fortnight we worked there, we didn't do any work. On that particular Monday, 250 went out for little work parties to farmers and so on. And on the third day, still being in the camp, we did see a fire, a forest fire, on the opposite side of the road, on the self-same side as the race courses. And we jumped those 3 barbed wire rolls, and before the fire service came and so on, we already had it under control. And they sorted us up, then we marched us back, then they counted us, and counted us again. And we were still all there, mind you, we were black. Yeah. And the thank you was, we had the next day, we took those 3 barbed wire rolls up, and there was only 1 wire. And he says, if anybody wants to go out that major, it is the gate. That was more or less the thank you, you see. And then we worked there. On the 3rd of June, 46, I went into a billet next door to the Brown Cow in Nettleham. But it's where now the big Lincolnshire police station, the main police station is in Nettleham. And to a farmer, on haulage contractor, G.W. Walker. And I built a garage. I had to make first the molds to make concrete blocks. And after that, I started building. I'm 47, I went back again. I was still prisoner of war. And then I went to... From there, I went into the Scottish farms in Denver's. It's where Hemsville Aerodrome is. that hill down is Harpswell. The village over towards Lincoln is Glenbrook. And I work for Scottish Farms. And 49, in April, I moved to Misson, which is just outside Bawtry, Doncaster way, to Nottinghamshire Crop Dryers and worked there and built the dryer up and so on. And that is my life story.
And then you married an English lady?
Yes, I married my dear. She is a nurse.
Where did she come from?
She comes from Misson.
That
is also 2.5 miles from Bawtry. That is where Nottinghamshire Crop Dryers is, Misson. Misson.
How did you meet her?
I knew her father and mother, and I had to. They asked me to build a fireplace in. You know, them kitchen grates, them at that time. And I said, I can't do it. I have to finish Dr. Smallon's garage off in Bawtry. Or I come when it is dark. So I went there when it was dark, and I heard somebody in the best room playing piano and singing Ave Maria, and that was it. That is for me. And then I met my dear wife.
This was in 49?
No, that was 50. Beginning of 50.